The Guardian.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, providing creative tools that help you bring your ideas to life. Squarespace offers free domain names, customizable designs, and 24/7 support. Go to squarespace.com and use the offer code Guardian to get 10% off.
Football Weekly with James Richardson.
International weekend, in which playoff sides met over two legs and Chile put England over one knee. We round up the playoffs on that Wembley spanking. Have a look at goalgetters Greece, Iceland and France, where Didier Deschamps now risks becoming an unqualified success in a very real sense. We look at what's been happening in Africa, warm up to England, Germany on Tuesday, discuss Ireland and all sorts of other treats, including your tweets and posts in today's Football Weekly. Intimate listeners, just you, me, and Barry.
Hello.
Jacob's here as well.
Hi.
Oh, look, there's Greg Bukowski as well.
Hello.
Oh, plus we've got phoners. And then I think Marcus Christensen's popping in a bit. He's going to be bulging at the seams. And Rafa and Philippe on the line, because there's so much to talk about internationally. So much. Barry, I know that you were across it all on that.
Well, it was one of those annoying things. I was sitting at home watching the Iceland-Croatia game on the laptop, and then I was kind of flicking between Ireland, Latvia, and England, Chile. So managed to not really watch any of them while trying to watch them all.
Probably the safest thing. We'll be speaking about the French game shortly with Philippe. Greg?
Well, I think I had about eight screens on the computer on Friday night because I was in work and I was having to tweet out all the goals from all these matches. And,
oh, okay.
Yeah, and, you know, I kind of saw bits and pieces of many games. But Greece-Romania was the one that caught my attention most because there were actual goals in it.
Well, it was ironic, wasn't it? Because we were suggesting, poo-pooing the notion that it might be in any way a dramatic game.
Well, it looked like it was going to be a stinker because Greece had conceded, I think, four goals in the whole of the qualifiers, scored 12. So, like, on that, it should have been, like, 1.1 to 0.3 as a scoreline.
But that's the beauty of football.
Yeah, and there you go. And then they went and thumped, you know, a couple of early goals in and just made for, a very entertaining match. And could have scored more. Could have been, like, 6-1 in the end.
Mitroglou, eh?
Yeah.
He's having a big season.
Yeah, and he his anticipation for the goals was fantastic, the way he just sprung the offside trap and the volley that he scored for the second.
Is this a new direction based on the sort of 8 nanoseconds you saw of this? Is this a new direction for Greece or will they soon be
I just think maybe Greece have got international football right, that you just kind of plod along and do what you've got to do and then save everything for the moment when it matters most, and they did.
Like England, Jacob, like England.
That's exactly what they did on Friday.
Brilliant, brilliant. We'll talk more about England later on. First, though, you mentioned Greece only conceding four goals in the qualifying process. You know who else only conceded four?
England and Ukraine.
And Ukraine. Mm. And France have to put at least three past Ukraine come Tuesday night at the Stade de France. Naturally, it's a somewhat perturbed Philippe Auclair, who we speak to now. Claire joins us now on the line. Philippe!
Oui.
How is the mood in Paris ahead of this second leg?
not exactly ecstatic. Shared between people saying, "Oh, this is terrible. This was all too predictable. French football needs to review and reform itself completely. This team is rubbish. It's made up of players who only think about themselves. It's not a team. Deschamps is washed up, etc., etc." And people who think, well, you know, remember the good old days of Saint-Etienne. Remember, it's been done before. Mets winning at Barcelona. You know, the impossible is possible, and so forth. I must say that the mood is one of more than disappointment. It's much, much more than disappointment.
Right.
The nature of the performance, not just the fact that France came back from Kiev with a 2-0 defeat, is the manner of the defeat and the way that Deschamps coped with it as well, the way that he coached his team and the way he reacted when things didn't quite go according to plan during the game. And honestly, you won't find many optimists in Paris or elsewhere for that matter at the moment.
Right. L'Équipe's headline, The Rage of Despair. And you mentioned one or two great comebacks of club football in Europe, but in European, in national kind of qualifiers, no one's ever turned around.
That's correct.
A 2-0 defeat in a playoff tie.
That is absolutely correct. And also, when people are taking examples in the past in French clubs doing something extraordinary. And obviously, I was never thinking about Saint-Etienne, the famous game against Ajax Pete, for example. There were others. You could say that these teams, or Metz and Barcelona, these teams were exactly the example of what this French team is not, as in they had incredible togetherness, as in they had a collective spirit that nobody had ever doubted, on top of, you know, technique and talent and so forth. The problem is that this French team, when you look at it on paper, you think, well, how could it be that such a team could miss on the World Cup? If they don't go to the World Cup, there's absolutely no doubt it will be, in terms of sheer talent, the biggest team not to go there. Most of the players, apart from the defense, and that's part of the problem, most of the players there are at the top of their game, reaching their maturity. They're playing for very big clubs in Europe and so forth. But it just doesn't work. It's completely dysfunctional. And a friend of mine told me that watching them play in Kiev was not watching a team. It was watching 11 people looking at themselves in mirrors all the time.
Interesting. Who of the various possible culpable parties is getting the most blame? Is it Lloris for the strange way he conceded
that first goal?
Or Nasri or future Ballon d'Or Ribery?
I would say in the immediate aftermath of the game, it was Laurent Koscielny.
Mm-hmm.
Because obviously, you know, he gives away a penalty and he's sent off, which means that he won't take part in the return leg, which means probably that Raphaël Varane, who seems to be okay, physically speaking, is going to be in central defense alongside Eric Abidal, which is not something that fills me with particular confidence, but there you go. Some people are thinking that Mamadou Sakho, even though he's hardly played in this position with Liverpool because he's playing in a three-man defense there, should be his partner in central defense. Otherwise, Samir Nasri got a lot of flack, yes, because he was supposed to play as the creator, the number 10, so to speak, in a 4-2-3-1, and he spent his time getting the ball very, very low, which means practically on the same line as Matuidi and Pogba, which means that this 4-2-3-1 was in effect a 4-3-2-1 with nobody really supporting Olivier Giroud, an age-old problem in Deschamps' team. So Nasri is taking a lot of flack, and people would like to see Mathieu Valbuena perhaps taking his place. Ribéry is taking some flack, but people know that he if France is to find those three or four goals from somewhere, it will have to be probably from in Franck Ribéry's box of tricks. So we've got to keep up with him. He's got to be much, much better. The one positive, I would say, is that the player who snuffed out Ribéry in the first leg, i.e. Fedetsky, is suspended for the return leg in France. So it may be that Ribéry has a bit of an easier time of it than he did in the Ukraine. And the last thing is that, of course, people are hoping that the atmosphere at the Parc des Princes, I'm showing my age here, at the Stade de France is going to be as good for the home team as it was in the stadium in Kiev for the Ukrainians.
Mm. All right.
I'm not too convinced about that. It will have, I mean, if they score early, I think anything is possible. Otherwise, it's going to be very, very tough.
Bonne chance, mon ami.
Oh, you're too kind. We'll need it.
Philippe Auclair. It's a funny time for this for France. You've got Ribéry about to win the Ballon d'Or. The under-20s have just won the World Cup. And all of a sudden, looks like, are they going out, do you think, Jacob?
Well, based on the amount of goals that Ukraine conceded, you would expect them to do so, yeah.
Mm. Oh, all right. A stirring comeback, do you think, Greg?
I think they'll have a go, but I can see Ukraine just setting themselves out and making themselves, you know, incredibly difficult to beat. And also, having seen them at close quarters just a few days ago and having, you know, held them at bay, that I can't see it being that different at the Stade de France. You know, maybe France will win 1-0, but I can't see them winning 3-0. Like, you know, they need to.
Hmm. Barry?
Well, Paris isn't exactly a bear pit when it comes to football, and it's easy to see the crowd turning on France very early rather than getting behind them. And they have a chance, obviously, but it's going to be a huge job, mightily impressive. I certainly wouldn't be betting on them to turn this one around. it will be a big loss if they weren't at the World Cup. They're generally very entertaining at tournaments, either because they're very good or because they fall apart at the seams. But I think they'd bring a lot more to the party than Ukraine will.
They could just park the bus outside one of the stadiums and we could just have them there instead of playing the football, but them having a row on a bus.
Right, driven by one of the players badly, where they can hit corners of the...
Driven by Evra or something,
I'm sure Ukraine will park the bus at the tournament anyway.
Nicely done, Greg. Now, in other news, of course, you've got your Portugal, Sweden, Marcus Christensen on his way to tell us what the Swedes thought of that. But let's talk about Iceland. No, let's not talk about Iceland, Croatia. 0-0, Greg. You saw a little bit of this, didn't you?
I saw a little bit of this.
Barry, it was on your laptop.
It was, indeed. It wasn't a very good game at all. Iceland will probably simultaneously be pleased and disappointed. They didn't make the most of their home advantage, but they have every chance going to Croatia.
Is there a word for being simultaneously pleased and disappointed, I wonder?
I don't know. There should be.
Yeah. If German listeners might like to post in with whatever it is in German.
I'd actually say, I don't know if they will. I don't know why they'd be disappointed, because you look at Iceland and Croatia and the players either team have got, and to get a 0-0 draw, given that they had 10 men for about 40 minutes, is probably one of the greatest results they've ever had, I imagine.
Really?
Well, against Croatia and players of the quality of Modric, I mean, it's a fantastic result, and they've kept the hopes alive when really they should have been extinguished there on the night.
That's true. What do the conditions look like there on your laptop? That's really...
It did look like Middle Earth. It was,
Did it look really epic and end of days?
Yeah, and quite, a lot of steam kind of
Ragnarok
going around. And some kind of orcs in the distance and a polar bear swinging from the stanchions.
Oh, that's good, because I'd have been disappointed if it was just a match with some people in gloves.
Yeah, no. Wasn't good. It looks better than that.
All right, excellent. Well, they've got quite a second leg ahead of them. I'm guessing in Zagreb, is it? In Zagreb?
Yes.
Good. And the other...
I think they have a good chance. Croatia.
Iceland?
Yeah.
Really?
Why not? Croatia are...
Get a score draw.
...on a terrible run of form.
Right.
Couldn't beat 10-man Iceland. And
fair
there's
point.
No reason why... I mean, Nikol Kovac, their new manager, has since that game come out and said, look, I don't know what's wrong with this team. It's just not performing. And... obviously, he needs to find out why very quickly. That's his job, and fix it. But whether or not he's able to do so by Tuesday night, it remains to be seen. It's quite a tall order.
Yeah. What a cliffhanger, eh? That certainly will be a cauldron, though, for the Icelandic players as they arrive in Zagreb. All right, well, the other playoff, delicately poised. Marcus Christensen, thanks for joining
Hello.
Us.
No
you
problem.
Just popped in seamlessly there.
Absolutely.
To discuss... What's the game in prospect for you then? As you return to Stockholm?
Yeah, absolutely. On Friday night we were a bit upset. It could have been worse, honestly. We could have lost 3-0. Ronaldo made us a bit angry. I don't know if anyone was watching it, but he was kind of calling one Swedish player a crybaby and going, "Wee." Does the man have no self-awareness? Does he not know what
was
he's been
when
doing
he got
for 10 years?
Booked for
no, he kind of he leant in, and it was the tiniest of headbutts. And Mikael Lustig, the Celtic defender, had been winding him up by blocking him and defending well and stuff like that. So he leant in, and I think Lustig, by the looks of it, thought, "Hang on a minute, should I get him sent off? And should I go down?" And then he thought, "Not really, it wasn't that bad." And then Ronaldo turned and kind of did this mimicking of tears and going to that. So that annoyed us slightly in the Swedish pub on Friday night.
Oh, slightly. This is you in seething
this
rage.
This is as angry as I get, actually.
The most mild-mannered man I've ever met.
Was there a lot of tutting in the pub then?
There was, yeah. And then obviously he scored the winner with 9 minutes to go. And then
again, with his head, ironically.
Yeah, exactly. He should have been off. No, he shouldn't really have been off, actually.
That was accidental, wasn't it? It was completely accidental when he stood on the goalkeeper's foot.
That bit was, but he did kind of nudge. There was a bit of a nudge with his forehead, wasn't there?
He is that kind of player.
Yeah.
Managers normally say he's not that kind of player, but I would say he is that kind of
player.
Where
is this Swedish pub, Marcus?
Near Marylebone.
Oh, okay.
Harcourt Arms. Near the embassy and the Swedish church and everything. Yeah, it'd be packed again on Friday. You have to buy tickets.
There's a rather fine Japanese restaurant just across the road. Yeah, tiny portions as well. But anyway,
we're good.
But if you're not hungry and fancy seeing the game, that's the side of the road
to go, because you need to get tickets, obviously, because it's a sellout. And we're still optimistic.
They sell tickets to the pub, do they?
And someone, like a friend, said afterwards, well, you're 1-0 down with 95 minutes to go, so it could be worse.
Wow, absolutely.
And Zlatan has scored, was it 10 goals in 8 games?
Yeah, but he didn't score any in this, did he? Mm. Where was Zlatan?
Zlatan went missing, sadly.
Did it spring, actually? In the big game.
So yeah.
Oh wow.
Yeah. Jacob, let's hard cut some, thank you. I'm annoyed. Can you see I'm annoyed?
Isn't the problem though that Portugal have got more players who can affect the game, and you look at the Swedish team and, you know, other than Zlatan, like we were saying, Kim Kallström's still knocking about. He seems to be knocking about since 1987.
Anders came on. He should start on Tuesday.
Yeah.
Kjellström was good actually. The Portuguese didn't create much in the first half. Hugo Almeida, he's clearly not a goal-scoring striker, but they were clearly better. But having said that, Zlatan scored 4 against England at home. He scored 10 in 8 games at the Friends Arena, so there is hope. There is hope.
We're talking cauldrons, Marcus. Will it be a cauldron there? Is it the Friends Arena, or have I got the wrong
Friends
country?
Arena.
It is the Friends Arena.
Yeah.
That just screams hostility, doesn't it? Weren't you telling me, Marcus, that just the sort of way it's built, that it isn't a cauldron because the noise just goes up
disappears. Yeah. And there's been discussion whether to have the roof open or not, and we think the Portuguese are going to be a bit cold and shivery, and we might get in that way, so the roof will be open so the noise will disappear. But there was a Swedish newspaper asked the readers what they kind of should do to put Ronaldo off, and the obvious one was to shout Messi, Messi, Messi as soon as he gets the ball.
But they've tried that before, haven't
Bosnia
they?
Bosnia tried it, and I think they got a draw, which won't help us, obviously. Another one was to put Sepp Blatter as the referee, because he clearly doesn't like Ronaldo. He's had a few digs, exactly.
Producer Ben suggests big mirrors along the sideline to distract him.
That's very good. That could work, actually. It's not too late.
It's not.
I'll tell the Swedes.
All right. Super stuff. So are you quietly confident underneath that seething business?
No. I don't think we'll do it, sadly. But okay. I desperately hope we'll do, but I don't think we will.
Quite a thing, isn't it? Could be a World Cup without the Ballon d'Or and old Big Nose himself.
Yeah,
it's a shame, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, we don't know yet.
No. All right. Excellent. Well, thanks for popping by.
No problem.
That brings us to the end of part one, listeners. All right. Okay, producer Ben's concerned people might abandon this pod midway through, so I've got to get this competition question in as early as possible. That breeds confidence, doesn't it? We've all got a little bit of a boost from that. Now, we did mention that we have a truly spectacular treat for you in November, and what it is, it's a chance to win a black 128-gig Wi-Fi-only iPad with, and this is the exciting bit, Football Manager handheld engraved on the back, so it looks like you nicked it off them. To win that and a copy of Football Manager Handheld 2014 itself, you have to answer a fiendishly tricky question on our SoundCloud page. Yes, indeed. SoundCloud page, soundcloud.com/Guardian Football Weekly. All will be explained. Good luck with that. Right. That's that then. And now England. Ah, yes. England. Jacob.
Yeah.
The same old problems again then, eh?
What, they can't pass?
Well,
mainly.
Is that what the problem is?
Well, if you compare them to a side like Chile, and Roy Hodgson was saying afterwards he's never seen a goalkeeper play so well and pass the ball so well, talking about the Chile goalkeeper passing the ball out from the back, lured in England players, and then suddenly popped it 40 or 50 yards over to a full back or midfielder, and off they went. But England can never play like that. They've never been able to play like that, and it's ridiculous to expect them to suddenly start doing it now. But I do think there was a slight overreaction to what was a friendly, because about a month ago we weren't even sure if England were going to even be at the World Cup. They are, and compared to the sides that played against Poland and Montenegro and played very well against Poland and Montenegro, didn't have Sturridge, didn't have Welbeck, didn't have Townsend from the start, Gerrard wasn't playing, Carrick wasn't playing, they had a bit of a change in defence as well, main goalkeeper wasn't there, so it was an experimental side at the same time as not one that played very well. And they had some debutants as well, Adam Lallana and Jay Rodriguez, playing their first ever games against a proper team in Chile, who they were very, very good, the Chile side, and deserved to win quite comfortably.
Hmm.
But immediately after an hour, or almost half an hour, people are saying, no, James Rodriguez shouldn't play for England. He shouldn't play for England. He's not good enough. Well, it's his first ever game. He's nervous and can't get in the game at all. We've just decided straight away that he's not good enough and shouldn't go.
The same level of patience that's afforded to like Premier League managers and players in the Premier League and club football, European football, is never afforded to anybody who plays international football. And it's ridiculous like that. I was talking to Jacob before, that a player, you imagine a player making his debut for his new club and he's just signed, and after 60 minutes, he'd never write him off if he didn't play well in that one game over 60 minutes. You give someone,
games in club football to give them.
Maybe look at, you can't write a player off after 60 minutes, maybe after two or three performances, because you have to in international football, like you say, because you don't get, you know, you don't play 40, 50, 60 games a season.
Right.
But I'm not making an apology for the way England played, but I do think the reaction from the fans and the media, and, you know, everybody's got to have something to read, and it's got to keep people interested, is never fair, and it's part of the problem why the England team is, you know, doesn't progress, because there's no patience afforded to anything any manager does.
You want someone like Lampard or Gerrard out the side, and then someone comes in to replace them, and you expect them to hit the ground running straight away, and not everyone is going to immediately be Andros Townsend and come in and score a 25-yard goal on his debut, and then be the man of the match in the next game as well.
Do you think that that's part of the problem, what he did?
You can't just expect, that's not how football works. You know, it's a new team. The way that Southampton play, they press the ball very high up the pitch, they win the ball very high. Every time I saw Rodriguez get the ball, he almost had it back to goal in his own half and couldn't get into the game at all. Lallana was a little bit better and almost scored when it was late in the first half and probably should have scored, but just a bit more patience.
And there's a good crop of young England players coming through, and, you know, over the next few years, it looks like, and you need to be treated better than it looks like they might, you know, treat Lallana and Rodriguez.
But is the problem as well that it would help if they had a winning side to slot into, whereas they come into this team and you just got into the World Cup and there's a certain amount of optimism and people are beginning to wonder, hang on, why couldn't we do well? But then you meet a team like Chile. And isn't that the reason for the negative reaction?
It was a different
against
level.
A proper team.
It was a proper team as well, one that basically was playing its strongest side as well. Mm. A settled team that's played.
They were missing their two best players in Eisler and Vidal, it could be argued.
But had Alexis Sanchez, who scored those two good goals.
A beast.
And they were unbeaten in 10 games going into this game.
Yeah, they're a good team.
Yeah.
Which is exactly what England are going to face at the World Cup. So in that sense, it did feel a little bit like a reality check.
Well, who needs a reality check? If you need a reality check, then you're an idiot, because we all know that England aren't going to win the World Cup.
Do we? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So what are you expecting? You should just have a bit of... They're not going to win. I don't know what people are expecting them to do next summer. Second round, quarterfinals, maybe.
Yeah, but you can understand people being disappointed if they lose a game like that.
What, a friendly?
No.
As well.
It's not just that they lose a friendly.
I don't think losing the game is the problem. Is the manner in which they were outclassed is a concern, because they're not going to become as good as Chile by summer. And Chile are not the best team in the world by any stretch of the imagination. But I think the crowd could be a bit more supportive. Mm-hmm. You know, the England rugby team got beaten on Saturday and were applauded off the pitch for a heroic display. The England football team lose a friendly and get booed. It's preposterous.
But I'm not sure what the concern is, because we know that if England play a good side that can keep the ball, they're going to lose. So almost see next summer as a chance to develop and get some more experience at international.
I know it's a realistic attitude that you have, perhaps, but it does seem very negative as well, saying if they play a decent team that can pass the ball, they're going to lose. Should we not be aiming for a little bit? Should England, sorry, not
they
be aiming
be,
for a little
but
bit
but that's
more
not that? What the reality is at the moment.
Okay,
and maybe there
I'm
is
looking
a way
forward
to
Tuesday night's game against
exactly.
Germany, because that one should be tight.
Are they
going
to get booed off if they lose 4-0 tomorrow night?
Do you think 4-0?
They could do, but probably not expecting that score. Something a bit closer than that, because they'll maybe be a bit more up for it.
And thankfully,
Tuesday.
Germany aren't going to have their full strength team.
See, I think part of the problem is that people who wouldn't normally take any interest in football get caught up in the World Cup hype, but, you know, take an interest, you know, for 3 weeks every 4 years, and they will presume England are quite good and expect them to beat teams like Chile, and when there's no real reason why they should.
Well, the fact that England are ranked 10th in the world and Chile are ranked where?
12th.
Okay, there you go.
But also, they've probably got heard that the Premier League's the best league in the world, and presumed that, you know, England get lumped in with the hype around the Premier League and thinking that this is the best quality thing ever, and it's not.
Right. I don't know. Change the goalie. New fella let in two. The whole thing's a disaster. Now, Raphael Honigstein joins us on the line.
Good morning.
Hey!
Hello.
Rafa. Hello. Hello. Hey, who's up next for England? It's only our old friends Germany, Rafa.
The Germans.
The Germans, fresh from a 1-1 with their bête noire, Italy.
Indeed.
18 years since you've beaten the Azzurri, Rafa. 18!
I know, it's amazing.
It is. But you came pretty close this time.
Yes. I mean, it was the kind of performance that made some people fairly optimistic that one day Italy can actually be beaten. At the same time, for some reason, Germany can't do it. And yet again, you know, they're sort of wondering why it is that Italy just have this spell over them. But Löw, I don't know if you saw his comments pre-match, couldn't have been more effusive with his praise for Italy. He said they're artists of illusions. They can make you believe that you're very much in charge, and then they switch from one second to the next and absolutely kill you. I mean, and he said tactically they're the best team in the world. Every player can play any system, and they've been talking about tactics for decades, whereas Germany had only started 10 years ago.
Right. Oh, effusive praise, as you say. The Germans hit the post three times, but only came away with a 1-1 draw after a terrific equaliser from Abate. But the bad news, Rafa, in what was ultimately a friendly, was the fact that, principally Sami Khedira getting a massive injury. And how bad is that in prospect?
Yeah, it's very bad. Cruciate ligament, that's 6 months. So he's obviously got, he's got very, very small chance of coming back in time for the World Cup. But even then, he wouldn't have played many competitive games before the tournament. So I think it's highly unlikely that you'll see him at the World Cup. And it is a big blow for a couple of reasons. First of all, he is a little bit different than all the other German midfielders. You know, he's more athletic, he's more box-to-box, he's physical, he can mix it up a little bit, whereas most of our midfielders these days are sort of the fairly small scheming type. And it was important to have somebody like him in the squad. And the second part, which is not widely known, is that he's incredibly influential behind the scenes. He's somebody who brings people together, who creates a lot of harmony when there's trouble or people are unhappy. They go to him, he talks to them. And he'll be missed because you have these big sections in the squad. There's a big Bayern block, there's a big Dortmund block, now there's an Arsenal block. And he, as a Real Madrid player, was the neutral who, you know, could talk to everyone without the fear of being seen as biased or anything. And he won't be there, and I think in terms of the atmosphere in the squad, that's probably even a bigger problem than missing him as a player.
Mm. Might he take a Beckham-esque role and go anyway?
That's a very interesting question. I'm not sure they have thought about that as yet. But
in the
Lewis might consider that because, as I said, he is really quite important behind the scenes.
Right. In the more immediate future, England on Tuesday night. Now, not only will he be absent, but also Özil, Neuer, and Philipp Lahm, who Jogi Löw started doing the old Guardiola thing of sticking him in midfield.
Yeah, and the Lahm in midfield question has become suddenly very en vogue because in Khedira's absence, there is a strong suggestion, all of a sudden, almost really overnight, that he might actually be Löw's preferred option, simply because he can blend qualities into that position that nobody else can. The other alternatives to Khedira are either Gundogan or Kroos or, you know, Schweinsteiger, so they're very, very forward-thinking players, technical players, or you go sort of almost a retro step, take an out-and-out defensive holding midfielder like Lars Bender, who will probably play at Wembley, which would be a good occasion to have a look at him. Lahm, of course, can do both. He can be a real holding midfielder, but at the same time be a bit of a deep-lying playmaker. The only problem that creates then is that Löw takes the best player from what is not the best of defenses out of the defense and creates another problem at the back. So it's really not an easy situation for him at all.
All right, then. Is it a bit of a B team that you're going to be fielding at Wembley? And what are the Germans expecting to see from this?
I wouldn't say it's a B team. I think it's more kind of an A minus or double A rather than a triple A. If you want to talk in ratings, they expect to see a good performance. They're not necessarily going to Wembley to win, but they want the team to do well and to take their chances, because something very strange has happened after all this talk about the defense not playing well and the attack scoring at will. The Italy game sort of turned it on its head. The attack looked fairly toothless and a little predictable and one-paced, and at the back they actually played decently. So they'd like to see that they're going into the right direction in both departments, you know, making the defense more stable but not losing the attacking impetus, because Germany in the World Cup qualifiers scored 36 goals. They also conceded 13, so they were incredibly exciting to watch. And they want to be a little bit less exciting without getting rid of the goals.
Brilliant stuff. Enjoy Wembley then, Rafa.
Pleasure.
Thanks for joining us.
To buy your copy of Tales from the Secret Footballer for just £6.50, that's 50% off the recommended retail price, head to The Guardian Bookshop at guardianbookshop.co.uk/footballtales and enter the offer code TALES, that's T-A-L-E-S. The offer's valid until the 24th of December.
Any prospective curveballs that Roy's going to throw selection-wise at everyone on Tuesday night, Jacob?
I think he'll try and play the strongest team possible. Right. I think Sturridge is meant to be back.
Sturridge coming back in, right.
Ricky Lambert might be fit as well, because he was injured on Friday night as well.
Okay, who'll be in goal?
Joe Hart.
Joe Hart
under pressure as well.
Under pressure. It's a big game.
Sturridge could be, you know, his pace in behind the German defence could be very useful, because, I know the German defence can be turned, so he could get in there, score.
There you go.
One interesting thing from Friday night as well was that with the defending for the first goal by Leighton Baines, who was a bit slow to react to Alexis Sanchez getting in front of him, and Baines is better going forward than Ashley Cole, but you do still wonder whether he's quite at it defensively in the same class as Cole. He probably quite had a good night on Friday.
Ashley Cole did?
Yeah.
Right. Okay, a little bit of music and then we're on to part three. Okay, look out, World Cup. Here come the African big guns. Ivory Coast, boom. Cameroon, boom. Nigeria, boom. And probably Ghana coming along too, because they've been a 6-1 up against Egypt, and the second leg's going to be played.
Quite a bit of partying going on in West Africa.
Yeah.
West Africa dominating.
Be on the same side as last time.
Yeah?
No changes.
No changes. One of them to do well, Jacob?
Well, you're asking for a Pele-style prediction.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't actually know which is the best. Ghana had the most standout result, didn't they?
Yeah. And I suppose if you look at, you know, they're the side who's done the best in a similar competition, almost making it to the semi-final, 2010.
Bloody Suarez.
Yeah. Scotland had a 0-0 draw with the USA.
What passed for the highlights of that game. Right. It seems to have been possibly the worst game of football ever played.
Really?
Yeah. I think it's with 3 shots on goal.
Ooh.
But as someone pointed out on Twitter, the way they're playing, it's almost as if both teams were playing a Sunderland striker up front, which they were.
Yeah, they can't all be exciting teams like Ireland or Holland and Japan. Don't know if you saw that game.
No.
I must admit, I didn't, but I did catch kind of extended highlights via a Japanese. He was fantastic, actually. Japanese commentary was great. I imagine it's less, you know, it probably means a bit more in Japanese, but they just put all these graphics all over the screen the whole time.
Like a computer game or something.
A bit like that, yeah. But there seemed to be a broad spectrum of commentators all in the same box, kind of shouting and grunting at each other at various points. I really enjoyed that.
Japan are good. They were exciting against Italy, weren't they?
Well, they went 2-0 down and brought it back to 2-2.
On the weekend.
No, against Holland,
yeah. Because they were 2-0 up against Italy in the Confederations Cup. Crazy game. They lost 4-3 in the end.
Yeah.
It was a crazy game. Yeah. But they play very fast, inventive football, don't they?
They certainly do.
It'll be someone to watch at
the
World Cup.
They're playing Belgium this week.
Belgium, who lost to
Colombia.
Wow. How about that? I mean, they're only friendlies in that. Yeah. Still, here's Greenmar saying, "Hi, hey guys, I hope you'll be covering the football renaissance at Lansdowne Road the other night." In the first half against Latvia, we attempted 351 passes and completed 320 of them. Eight times as many passes in that first half against Latvia as in the equivalent game against Poland 9 months ago. Wow, Barry, what on earth's going on?
Yeah, it was a remarkable performance by Ireland. They had, I think, 91% pass completion rate, as that correspondent says. But it looked like a giant boulder had been lifted off the shoulders of various players. James McLean, who has not played well for quite some time, was the man of the match. Wes Houlihan finally, you know, has a manager who has confidence in him, and if he played really well, if he continues to play like that, he will be, you know, the first name down the team sheet, you'd imagine. Robbie Keane still scoring. I have to say I'm not his biggest fan. I was calling on him to hang up his boots, but his hunger for the game is remarkable. I thought maybe when he went to LA it was just to pick up easy money and sort of live out his dotage, which perhaps it is to a certain extent, but he's shown no indication that he has any interest in retiring from international football, and his goal scoring record is remarkable for Ireland.
Mm. Well, a terrific performance, 3-0, and this wasn't just against any team, this was against Latvia.
Latvia, yeah. Exactly. You know, the old saw is that you can only beat what's put in front of you, but they beat them with such elan. It was remarkable, especially after the turgid dross we've had to put up with from Giovanni Trattoni.
How did this touchline, the sideline dynamic work with Keenan O'Neill?
Just normal, yeah. Keane was just general assistant manager duties.
I saw a picture of O'Neill sat down and Keane kind of up, like leaning almost over the pitch, and it could have been the lead that O'Neill was holding and just holding Keane off the pitch, and he was barking instructions at the players. And I wondered whether that's how it's going to be from now on.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, it, as you say, it's just Latvia, but it bodes well for the future.
Yeah, it's good for football, isn't it? Now, what else was interesting were the amount of reactions we got to this notion that managers look like TV detectives or similar.
Well, not necessarily look like, but just remind one of, either through characteristics or appearance.
Right. Greg, do you know what we're talking about here?
I do now, because you've just explained it.
Just explained it. Nice. Yeah. Language, eh? Fantastic, man.
Words.
Amazing, yeah.
Conveying meaning. Yeah. Marvellous. For example, well, some people who went for, you know, direct looky-likies, you had Christopher Boylan, one of my favourites, this, re-managers as fictional cops. Trapattoni must be Commandant Eric Lassard out of Police Academy. Bingo, he really is. Although ID 7481140 says Giovanni Trapattoni is Frank Drebin. David Corbett or Alex Ferguson as Taggart, surely, and one or two other people piling in on that one.
Well, that's probably the best of all, because he looks...
He genuinely does look like
and him. Behaves like that.
Mm.
I'd like to see Sir Alex Ferguson saying, there's been a murder.
Murder.
A murder.
Few words are quite so satisfying to say as murder. anyway, moving along. Adam Carruthers, how about Harry Redknapp as Huggy Bear? Fantastic. Mm. I like it because it's a little incongruous, no? But it's a suggestion that, yeah, it's a kind of reboot thing where he would be the wise informant saying...
It'd be Kojak, thingy from Roma, Spalletti.
Spalletti is Kojak. I'm not sure about that.
No?
Well, I think Adriano Galliani might be a little bit more Kojak-esque with his lollipop and that.
Columbo, is there a Columbo look-alike?
Ooh, Columbo.
Mm, with that
Mac. Bob Stokoe had the Mac at the 73 Cup final.
Mm.
Sunderland beat Leeds, but that's about it.
Mm. Wise Men Say podcast. I can't agree with you on AVB re-cop shows because we said he doesn't fit in.
Well, I said he was... like in internal affairs.
Yeah, great shout. But a Wise Men Say podcast reckon some Mulder type in an X-Files style show. But you replied...
that he's not paranoid enough.
Right, that would be more Mourinho's bag.
Yeah.
What would Mourinho be? He'd be living under a volcano somewhere. then we've got Philippa B, who points out that Tony Bulis looks like someone off the bill. I don't know if we've got any bill watchers.
Somebody who, like, the police are chasing on the bill. In
I don't know. Him off the bill. She did post a hyperlink, but I forgot to click on it. So, hey. Anyway, if you watch the bill, you might know who Philippa P is talking about. She also mentioned Christophe Gautier of Saint-Étienne, who's clearly the boss.
Didn't the bill finish about 7 years ago?
Right, yeah. Okay.
Sam Allardyce looks a bit like Tosh Lyons off the bill.
What this reveals is that a lot of people sit at home watching ITV4 in the daytime who listen to this podcast.
Who'd have thought?
It's a strong nexus in that particular Venn diagram. Yeah. One thing. Well, you know what? That's pretty much it. I did leave a little space to talk about transfers here, but there haven't really been any strong things. Although...
Well, I was doing the rumour mill this morning, and there was talk linking Alessio Cerci to...
Churchy, sorry, to...
Arsenal or Manchester United.
Yeah, Church is an absolutely terrific player. Really, really, really good. Can play out wide, can also play as a centre forward, and he's been brilliant for Torino this season. Mm.
Apparently, Juve want him as well, but only if they can get rid of Mirko Vucinic first. He's fallen behind the pecking order, behind Llorente and Mr. Carlos Tevez in the pecking order at Juve. Why would Juve want... Is Churchy a striker or a winger?
No, you play
both?
Him as a kind of winger.
Right.
As a wide... Or if you had sort of three, or even as Conte sometimes likes to play four across the front, you could play him out wide. But he is terrific. And Juve apparently have all sorts of money because all the Italian papers are full of how they're going to buy this player or that player. We'll see, because they often do that without anything actually happening. Arsenal also supposedly have been granted clearance to talk to Corinthians for Alexandre Pato. Which should be interesting. Not sure how much that would work out. He's got a terrific injury record. And I also read, can you shed any light on this with your rumour mill experience, that Manchester United are hot for Leighton Baines again for $16 million in the January transfer window?
Got to think outside the box a bit there, Moyes, if that's the case.
Yeah.
I'd have thought.
I agree with you, Greg. Well, on that bombshell, one for the purists. I was there. We'll be back to regular service on Thursday when we look forward to... Premier League weekend and all the action coming up across Europe. In the meantime, as many thanks to producer Ben, to Rafa on the phone, to Philippe on the phone, to Marcus Christensen, to Jacob Steinberg, Greg Bukowski and Barry Glendenning. And you listener, we'll be back on Thursday.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, providing creative tools that help you bring your ideas to life. Squarespace offers free domain names, customizable designs, drag and drop tools and 24/7 support. Squarespace also offers seamless e-commerce solutions for you or your small business. Every design automatically includes a unique mobile experience that matches the overall style of your website, so your content will look brilliant on any device. Start your free trial today, no credit card required. As a Guardian podcast listener, you'll get 10% off your new account by using the offer code Guardian.